Welcome to this episode of the Down the Pub podcast. On this episode, it's kind of like a part two to last week. We went through our season preview of how the squads are shaping up and stuff like that. But we thought that we would hold over your Halifax Wanderers until this week because just obviously we want to go a little bit more in depth into how we think. Things are looking for the team, and maybe break it down a little bit. And then we're also going to do our season predictions, and we're also going to give you our projected lineups for the weekend if everybody's fit, obviously. And then we had a couple of questions left over from last week that were kind of more related to the Wanderers, so we kind of held them back for this week so we get through those too. And if there's anything else I'm missing, I'm sure that Chris and Gary will let me know. How's it going, lads?
Good, good, yeah. Beautiful
Excited.
day. Yeah, very excited. I just before I walked down to the waterfront and it was very beautiful down there. And I just was trying to think about things we might talk about tonight. So lots of thoughts percolating that I can't wait to talk about.
Awesome.
Super excited, like seeing the watch party post go out
Yeah.
today on the socials.
I love
And the
that they're doing
fact
that
that
again.
Yeah, me too, man. Oh, and the fact that it's still the privateers, it's still the family running things, like it's not somebody else trying to sweep in. It's still the good old folk from year one, still running these programs, running these shows, running these events. It's fantastic. And excited that we've got a home game in like what, 2 weeks? Like normally
No.
we're waiting a month for everybody else to get their home openers out of the way, and ours is soon. It's in just in a few weeks. So yes. The excitement is building, brother.
I'm actually sorry, go ahead, Gar.
Speaking of watch parties, if anyone listening knows of somewhere in Wolfville that might be showing it on Saturday night, please let me know.
Oh, you
Thank
poor
you.
bastard. The kind of good thing is, like, I was just going to say, the good thing is that it's kind of a later game. So it's after the kids go to sleep. So I'll be able to, like, actually sit down and enjoy it and kind of take it in a little bit rather than trying to watch it in between getting punched in the face and scratched in the face from the little boxes that
I was
I
going to
call
say
my kids.
from your wife.
No,
Oh,
I was signing my wife. Oh, God.
that's great.
And I deserve every one of them. So yeah, I thought we would kind of first of all, I just kind of wanted to get Chris, because I know Chris and you do too, obviously, Gary, but I know that Chris has like been kind of keeping an eye on a lot of the kind of players that have been kind of coming through. So obviously today I think it was announced that we signed Daniel Clark to U Sports contract. So where do you see him and Russian that's kind of fitting into? Do you just think that Jans is going to be number one and that's it, or will there actually be a little bit of competition this year?
Yeah, I don't not to be rude to those two young men, especially Aiden, getting to know him over the last couple of years. He's a wonderful young man, hard worker. And when you're in a position like his, it's very easy to get disillusioned and disheartened with what's going on. But not only is this guy bringing it in training and being a real good part of the team's core, the team's nucleus, but he's also kind of stood out on his own as well. He is sort of taking under his wing both this year and last year some of the younger players, the under 23 players who are kind of integrating into the outside of the club system, trying to ease them in, trying to kind of be that example of what to do and how to do it more or less. So if I'm blunt, I think, obviously Yan's number one. I think Aiden would be the number two. And I think in Dan's case, with the intention, I'm assuming, of him to go back to CBU and compete for another national championship. His minutes will be limited to none, but to be within the system again, the under 23 program, to be involved in that, to get some game action in at a high level outside of the university season without having to leave the province, I think is also important for a young man like himself, who somebody told me he's doing some of his classes during the summer this year as well. I think he's just trying to get that education out of the way so he can finally fulfill his professional dreams and obligations. But to be blunt, I can't see there being competition. Yan showed and proved last year that he was one of the most consistent and just stalwart keepers of the league. In his first season, it's easy to come to a different country and and misjudge the pace of the sport or how the game is played. Yan improved. You know, we joked a couple times last year during the preseason. There were a few errors, if you will, and it seemed like he got those out of the way and became a steady Eddie, if you will, in between the pipes. So I think that it's his to play for. I think the gambler in me, I honestly want to throw it an over under number of like 25 and a half or 26 and a half games. Like, is he going to play the whole season again? I can't see that. I can see Aiden finally breaking in and getting a match or two, but I think it's Yan's job for the foreseeable.
That's awesome. Yeah, I really love that the under 23 system is actually like, it's not just picking up a bunch of young players and sticking them together, right? There actually is a pathway, as we've seen, like where Kareem Sell and players like that, that is actually like, it's there's a means to an end. And I think that having that squad there for Daniel to kind of get some game time and be around a kind of professional environment, or what, like, obviously it's going to be different than what he's used to in at CBU. So yeah, it's awesome, and I'm really happy for him. So I'm
seeing him too. Sorry, Anthony, not to cut you off. The timing is really good too, because the rosters have expanded, for lack of better terms. So like, this opportunity probably wouldn't have been available to Dan last year, and now here it is. And you would hope and assume that the other clubs in the league are the three goalkeepers mandatory? That's the one question I actually had for you fellas. I should have looked it up myself, but I wasn't sure. Is it a mandatory thing?
I don't think so. I think you have the option to do it, if I remember correctly, because it's not, I don't think it's feeding, like, it's not taking up a spot in your overall squad. If
that might have been what it was.
I could be wrong, but like, I honestly just saw we can have an extra goalkeeper, and it kind of makes sense, because like, if one goalkeeper gets injured, you need to have a sub on the bench, you know what I mean? So it kind of makes sense to, rather than just having to, we had a couple of times where we've seen like just like kids being plucked from U Sports and just being stuck on a bench somewhere. At least this way, like, they're getting, as we mentioned, like, the kind of professional environment, and kind of, it's going to be, even if he doesn't end up ever staying with the Wanderers, at least he's got those four steps into the professional league, and they're not having to end up like, you know, just riding the bench in some crappy academy somewhere. So yeah, good for him. Gary, for you, I actually did have a quick question just before we get into the whole breaking down the squad thing, just in terms of Yan. Like, so were you surprised last year about how well he is able to play from the back, and like, how important is he to our system in actually, in terms of being actually able to play with the ball at his feet?
I think we're quite smart in how we use him. We don't overload him with responsibility from a playing out from the back perspective. I think the way we used to play out was Dan and Kale would each split to the corner of the 18-yard box. They'd take a corner each and then look to build like that instead. So you'd have those two passing options. Lorenzo centrally would drop in, so you'd have kind of that triangle of passing options. And if all three of those were getting man-marked, Yan could either drift on out to one of the fullbacks, or he could go long into Massimo or Aiden on the right. So I think we used him intelligently. We didn't give him too much. We didn't give him responsibilities that weren't within his capabilities. We know the player. I think we all know the player. We know his limitations there, but we also know how good he can be there, and we lent into that. So thought he was used well.
He was definitely like an integral part of how we kind of went about our business. And, you know, it was a spot that we've kind of struggled with a little bit. You know, like, we obviously had Christian the first 2 years, 3 years, and I felt like it sounds terrible, but we kind of outgrown him a little bit of where he was. And that's shown that he hasn't gone on playing for anybody else. So, yeah,
Yan's biggest strength is how he makes his defenders feel. Do you remember, like, again, not to kind of denigrate old goalkeepers or whatever, but if the opposition ever got a corner against us, the whole stadium, you could feel the tension, and you could feel the tension emanating off the players as well. But with Yan, he just brings his presence on set pieces, which is something we've never really had, and he calms his defenders down as well, because he's experienced and he's mature. So yeah, he's a wonderful goalkeeper.
Yeah, I know that tactics is your forte, but Chris is no slouch either. So Chris, like, with the players we brought in obviously Jeremy back into the fold, we brought in Vitor Diaz, Julian Dunn and players like that. So do you think that tactically we're going to stay the same, or do you think that we're going to adapt to a different kind of philosophy? Because I feel like sometimes when we're with teams, like the way they play, but then it becomes very predictable. And I think that Patrice seems kind of coach that just wants to, he'd be willing to change things up a little bit. So what are you thinking?
I think that's the big piece there. I think we saw a lot of what was with Patrice last year, like the variations of the base we saw, but we didn't see the base variate, if that makes any sense. When we saw the base variate, it was to maintain a lead. We'd have Daniil come in, and then we'd have a solid 3/5 in the back. The midfield would be a little more rigid, if you will, less fluidity, less width. You'd see the guys on the wing kind of tuck in a little bit just to try to create a bit of a wall. From what we, and I don't want to say too much from what we saw in training, obviously, because I don't want, again, I don't want to give the card away. But from what I've been hearing in preseason is they've actually worked with multiple structures. So that part excites me, because as much as Patrice comes with his own philosophies and his own ideas and his own elements of his tactics, to see him also want to take the risk and evolve and see what this player can bring in this position, or what this player can possibly bring in that role. We kind of got a glimpse of that during the open training sessions and the preseason games, quote unquote, if you will, against the selects team. We're gonna do our starting 11 predictions here in a bit, so I don't want to really totally give away the answer to that question yet, Anthony. But I do believe that we will see, based on some of the players we've signed and some of the stuff we've talked about the last couple of weeks as well. I remember asking you, Gary, a couple of episodes, are things going to be more central? Are things going to be tighter than it's been traditionally in Wanderers history, for example? Will it be 3/5 in the back? Will we still have two hard center backs? How will the fullback, Riley and JGL, how do they tuck in on the left to the right? There's so many little questions that, to me, just keeps the mind moving and flowing, and makes me more excited for kickoff at the start of the season, because I feel like even in that first match against Pacific, yes, they don't have the personnel, as I underlined last week and got one bad DM. But
It's not too bad.
not just one, just one, just one. But I think even in this first match against Pacific, hopefully with a lead intact, we can see a little bit of what the future holds, tactically. From what I've heard, we came out of preseason full of health, which is not something that we've been lucky with over the last few years. There's always been one or two injuries coming into the season, and we saw how roughed up the boys were during the open training sessions, but it sounds like they all recovered. The results might not have been our way per se, but from what I've heard, the performances were to par or above par, which is good. So it's going to be interesting to see what matches what I've heard so far in terms of the flow and the tactical base.
So Gary, we're out, getting yourself taken off Patrice's Christmas card list. What are your thoughts?
I think the buzzword is variety, as Chris alluded to. Patrice talked about it a lot. He's talked about it a lot in interviews we've done for him. And something I read recently was an interview with Bobby Smyrniotis, and he talked about how Forge have around five different tactical structures that they look at throughout the season. And when he said that, I thought, like, okay, so I would guess then we aim to have a similar amount of different structures. So if you think about last season, we had 3-box-3, but we had about two or three different versions of it. Sometimes we inverted the fullback, sometimes we inverted the right winger. And then we also had whatever that was that we used against Pacific away. It was like a 5-3-2 with Aiden playing as a six. It was, I feel like that was a one-off, but it was still something we did. So if we take those three formations, I think we're going to add one or two new looks to that as well. And again, as Chris mentioned in training, I don't think it's given too much away to say it was a 3-4-2-1. It's quite a lot of teams are using it. Forge use it sometimes with wing backs, with a double pivot and two tens. And I think that's going to be number four in terms of tactical looks we have. Again, I don't know when we're going to use each one. It will depend on the opposition. It will depend how many times we've played each team. It will depend what areas of the opposition we're looking to target. But we will move through those three, four, five different looks throughout the season. And you need that variety when you play each team four times. So principles will remain the same regardless of how we look. The principles will remain the same. We want to create central overloads. We want to get it into the tens as quickly as possible. We want to turn them around. We want to play in half spaces. None of that will change. What will change is what it looks like when we kind of have that bird's eye view of the pitch and where people are standing to drag the opposition out of passing lanes and things like that. That will all change depending on the formation, but will still very much be a Patrice, a Jed, Jordan team, I think.
So it wasn't like we just went and bought upgrades what we had last year to fit into the same system. You think that we bought these new players in to change what we had? Do you
We,
think?
you've got to evolve, mate. You've got to evolve. We can't like everyone now knows how we played last season. All of the analysts analyze us four times. So we need to keep that in our back pocket for certain days. But all the top teams evolve season to season. No one stays the same.
What about you, Chris? What do you think?
I totally agree. Like, the base of last year had elements of what Steven Hart provided. The long ball was there. There's no question. But that bridge to the long ball was brand new. And I think that caught a lot of clubs off guard that are used to the Halifax way, who may not have had the film available of Patrice's tactics or Patrice's work. And from what I've discussed with, I've been very, very lucky to sit down and have dinner with both Jed and Jordan. And we talked about some of those philosophies and how much was invented and how much came from Vaughn and how much came from a different source, a different inspiration. And that was one of the things that he talked about was that unpredictability. It's cliche, but it's something that, not to knock Steven, I love Steven to death dearly, but the unpredictability started to erode halfway through that third year, the second half of that third season, when the season kind of fell off a cliff and that hangover dragged into year four. So I think Patrice would be smart to refer to the history of the Wanderers and try to find ways to continue to be inventive and creative. Because I think as a fan base now, not only do we have expectations of results, but as Gary has mentioned, even before I've been lucky enough to join you gentlemen again, the expectation of the style of play, it exists. And I think a good chunk of our fan base would be happy, even if we weren't winning matches, so long as we were showing that tactical progression and that willingness to show a little bit more in the final third. So I think that's the word, unpredictability, and whether it's, starting a random game 3-4-3 with three hard forwards with a hard press, or like the Christmas tree formation in the midfield, something just to shake things up. Like you said, Forge has five, six different tactics every season. Tommy builds off of one structure, but it's like three or four different ways of implementing it. York does so well coming to Halifax year after year because every time they come to Halifax, it feels like they've got a different system or a different structure. So I think we saw that in spades a little bit last year, but I think we'll see a full deck of it this year.
And I think we can all be guilty of over-indexing formations as well. I think they are important, but what's really important are your principles of play. So, and that's what they'd have been working on all pre-season. Like, with regards to formations, a decent opposition coach within 15 minutes of the game will have figured out what you're doing anyway and would have made necessary changes to like plug those holes. But what carries you through a season and what fosters success is how solid are your principles, how much buy-in do you get from your squad? And I think that was one of our big successes last season.
So here's a question for you. So obviously we talked last week about Ottawa and basically all the players they brought in, and they because it's like basically a brand new team, pretty much they're gonna have to start from scratch a little bit. So considering that, looking at what who we've kept and who we brought in, whose seat would you rather be in? Would you rather be in Patrice's seat or would you rather be in Carlos Gonzalez's seat?
We're incredibly partisan podcasts,
I
so
but like I'm just trying to like just
yeah.
take your Wanderers hat off for a second.
It's a
I
fun
mean,
question as a football manager guy myself, because what Ottawa has done essentially, it's like, gut the yard in terms of like the periphery of the squad. You get rid of, and I'm trying to be disrespectful. In fact, I have a lot of respect for a lot of those players that Ottawa got rid of, but the dead wood, the guys that when after the 85th minute weren't quite given 110%, they got rid of a lot of those guys. They brought in guys that wherever they were employed, whether it was within the CPL or outside of the CPL, but specifically the guys that were from within the CPL, you can kind of tell. And if you look back last year, the year before, whether it's KDS or DeBrienne, these guys played well against Ottawa. So it's almost as if Ottawa were like, all right, this guy killed us. Let's bring him here. This guy did well against us in this role. Let's bring him here. Manny always steps up against us. Let's bring him in. Like it seemed almost as if they built the squad to against like what destroyed them over the previous couple of years. So it's kind of been, we've debated it and we've talked about it, and it's like beating a dead horse at this point because it's almost like, what can you do? But it's been kind of fun to watch how they've put such a fun, and I don't want to say deep squad, because we, like I said last week, we still have to see if the depth is truly there. How do the intricacies kind of fit and go together? But I'm impressed that Fernando was able to build a squad that looks on paper this strong. And there's also question marks to go with it as to how these players will perform, where will they be in the formation, et cetera. So to play devil's advocate, as like a football manager nerd, I would rather be in Ottawa's perspective, because I feel like I can maybe put more of my fingerprints on a clean slate rather than with Patrice. You've got a lot of guys coming back, guys that have played for him before CPL time, Farrin, Ferrazzo, et cetera. So I get where it would be more beneficial, and I'm sure Gary will kind of talk about this. I'm sure that's where it would be more beneficial to have that continuity, to know who's coming to work for you, to know they're going to give 100%. But the mystery of Ottawa is a little bit intriguing to me as kind of a football manager nerd.
I think I see, and I don't know if this is because I want to see it, but I think I see major limitations to what Ottawa have done. And so if I look at their team, and I look at their coach, so firstly, their coach, who no matter what he says, his DNA is to set up defensively and play on the counter attack in transition. If I look at their team, they are not set up for that in any way now. So even if you look at their midfield, they'll probably have Zapata sitting as a holding midfielder and Ollie Bassett and Manny Aparicio playing ahead of them. Which one of Manny or Ollie is going to sacrifice themselves and sacrifice kind of their chance at making it to a high level by being very, very selfless and playing one line further back to support Zapata? Because if neither of them do that and they both float and try and play a free role, Ottawa are going to be the easiest team in the league to play through if you break their first press, because their 2-8s are going to be right up the field, and it's literally going to be 106-year-old Zapata coughing his way around the pitch trying to chase everyone that's counting on them, and they're going to be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
If you look at their other big signing, Tabla, brilliant player, but Tabla is a transition player. He thrived on Ottawa before because they were a counter-attacking team. They're not a counter-attacking team anymore. They just don't have the players for that. So they're going to be the protagonists now. They're going to be facing a lot of low blocks. Tablet is useless up against a low block because he's all pace and power, and he needs 20 yards of grass to run into. If you take that away from him, he's not a small space player. He's not going to like play that cute little pass on the edge of the box. So they'll win more games than they lose just because they've got so much talent. And at the end of the day, talent is 80% of it. Tactics probably 20%. So they will win a lot of games, but yeah, I see massive gaps there. And again, maybe that's because I want to see it, but I just think that hasn't been built with, I don't know, I just don't think it's been built with the best interests of the squad in mind. It's been built to appease a fan base that had turned on the owner and turned on the manager. But hey, maybe I've just got sour grapes.
Maybe you do. And
The first 2 months are going to be,
I'll
I'm
be
not going to
fine.
say it's going to tell the season story, but I think if they hit the ground running, The pressure's immediately off. The fans will be buoyant. They'll be selling tickets. Things will be falling into place, and that'll be what they want. And then, to an extent, that'll be what they expect. But you know, if they come out of May with like just a win or two, a lot of that vitriol will carry over. And we saw that here in Halifax last year with Patrice in the draw run. You know, some of the messages and comments that I saw on both Twitter and Facebook, I wanted to reach through the screen and strangle people because I was just like, guys, we're hitting the restart button. Like, this is year one all over again. And that was what I emphasized last week. Like, my hot take with Ottawa was this could be a 2-year thing. You know, they've signed the Galacticos, but, you know, Gary with a perfect example. If one of Ollie or Manny don't end up playing out of position, they're both essentially in the same position. Who's going to take that step back? If Zapatero is a step behind, is Sissoko going to want to come in and play the hold? No. Sissoko likes to get box to box. He likes to get involved in the play going forward and wide. He can't do that if he's going to have to play the hold. So to me, Gary makes a great point that, and I mentioned that last week, coaching and continuity, the chemistry, the C's, that's going to be crucial. In the first 2 months, it's not going to define the season, but it's definitely going to define how the fan base reacts to results in June, July, and August.
And you mentioned the Galacticos there. What did the Galacticos win when they were all together? Not a lot. That kind of 2003, 2007 period where they had all of them, that I think they won one La Liga maybe, but nothing else because they were so open and it was individuals. So yeah,
I think you're probably going to get another admonishment from Ollie Bassett for saying things about Zapater there. Mate, so
I can take it from that little what's it.
So I don't really like doing this, but I think
you're definitely editing that out.
I'm definitely not. I'm not really a fan of doing these kind of things, but I think it's kind of fun as well. So, you know, looking at who we've signed as a transfer window or a window, say out of 10, how happy are we with who we've recruited? And obviously looking at how they're going to be integrated into the squad and the systems. Gary.
Oh, sorry. Very, very happy. I feel like the biggest need we had was to sign experience because we had a very, very young group last year, second youngest in the league, I believe. Youngest starting 11 multiple weeks throughout the season. And there were occasions when that immaturity showed. I think of all the points we dropped last year in the last 5 minutes of games. When you have experienced heads who've been in those game states 150 times in their career, they know how to manage those moments. And I felt like there were games last season where we didn't have that. So experience was a big one for me. CPL experience as well in Ryan Telfer and Jeremy. And then Christian Valeski, who has played 10 years at a higher level than CPL. So we've done that. And then sprinkled throughout that, we've got some exciting prospects as well in Vitor Diaz, who I know a lot of supporters are very excited about, and Giorgio Probo, who I know a lot of staff at Wanderers are very excited about. I feel like every year there's a player who come out of preseason and you talk to people and they say, oh, he's good. Everyone I've spoken to, Giorgio Probo has been the one that they've gone, we've got a player here. And from having those conversations, it's made me go back to his highlight tapes and it's made me track down Creighton matches. And we do have a player here. So I'm very, very excited about him.
So Martel 10?
8.5. The only slight concern I have, and I think I've mentioned it on here before, is I just want a bit of running power in the middle of the pitch. I don't think that's always our game, but there are games when the patterns aren't there and the passing isn't quite crisp enough and the legs are heavy. And I feel like if you have some running power centrally, and I think of the example in the CPL, his name, I've forgotten his name now, the centre midfielder for York, someone listening right now is screaming the name.
I know, I'm trying to remember how to pronounce it too.
Who that guy, someone of his profile, I feel like we need, but I don't know if someone of his profiles is available. So, yeah, very, very happy. 8.5 out of 10 for me. And it would have been a 10 if we had that sort of profile in the squad.
What about you, Chris?
I think it's Sumaoro.
Yeah.
I'm probably butchering that
Is
team
his
that's
first
out.
name Bruno?
Brem.
Brem, that's it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Him.
But I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, he was a disruptor in a very fluent, kind of expressive York team. Like, they struggled at times last year, but when York was clicking, he was the reason why. And I personally I love the way the midfield is set up, but I was the type of guy that if I have one criticism of Matt's moves this year was letting Armin Wilson go, because I think that he was such a good direct replacement for Rampe, and Rampe kind of sort of fits that profile you're talking about, but like not entirely Gary, but if we have anybody in the team that can be that kind of workhorse, it is Rampe. So I having Armin, I think, in the side this year would have given me a little bit more security. I'm not even just trying to piggyback off of what Gary said. I totally agree that the experience was very crucial this year. I did want to see a little bit more defensively signing wise. Not 100% sure of the rumors about Max, but sounds like he's not going to be a part of the team, and we're still waiting on Kareem's injury report, injury situation. So that right there is two bodies down than I thought we would have. So, maybe there's something in the pipeline with the, like I said, talking about the expanded rosters, good way to kind of patch and fill those holes is with those development picks. I think that Patrice and Co are very confident with what they have in the back line, which would explain the overall lack of recruitment. But I look at somebody like Julian Dunn, for example, whether it's a two-man system or the potential three-man system that we've been talking about in the back. He's somebody that's going to be really, really crucial and really, really important. And I think very quietly could end up being one of the biggest signings of the season. To answer your question, I would say 7.5. The reason I did that when Gary said 8.5 is because that was my number. But I would say like a 7.5 for the business. And I was going to add that point or that one, that hard one. And we've talked about this before, just about the retention, keeping Fernandez, keeping Nimmick, keeping Lowry, keeping Lorenzo. That in itself feels like a great signing too. So in terms of the signings, a 7.5, but in terms of like the total business, 8.5, closer to 9.
Yeah, I will say I think the Julian Dunn thing is almost as massive as the Danielle Henry signing last year, I think, but it's just gone so much under the radar because obviously of his injury problems and obviously what's been going on in the capital. So it's kind of just being kind of low key. I think that's kind of it's probably how we wanted it too, though. You know what I mean? Just to kind of not to have too much fanfare around it, and I really hope that everything stays together for him because he seems like a really nice guy and he's a wonderful player. So I'm
That's what's sweet too about, it's not to cut you off, sorry, Anthony. It sounds like when you talk to TFC fans and talk to people that have coached Julian in the past, I believe Patrice did himself, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong with that, but everybody says exactly what you said. Good professional, good character, somebody that you want on your team. And if you have even one of those three things, you're welcome, as far as I'm concerned. But Julian seems to tick all three of those boxes. And because of those intangibles, his injury issues don't worry me as much because somebody like him who's got a will and a way will get through them regardless. Obviously, fitness is fitness. It can catch up on you and hurt you without any expectation. And sometimes there's nothing you can do about it. But I'm confident with his professionalism and with his history and with everything I've been hearing from TFC fans about how great of a guy he is, he's like, aside from Zach, obviously, because you guys know how much I love that guy, Julian is my want to be a success story for 2024 for sure. Because I think even if he moves on to the next step, even if like we're just a bridge for him to get back into MLS contention or get a big European move higher than he was before, that'll make it all worth it as far as I'm concerned.
yeah, I think as well, we're not really a club that does blockbuster signings. Like Danielle Henry was a huge one for us. I know how excited Derek was about it. And as I said, like I think that's a really good sign for us. And I think it like a year or two ago, that would have been a blockbuster sign for us. But overall, I agree with you guys. I think it's been a good window. We did cover what was an issue last year, as Gary said, about being able to close games out and just having that kind of clear head. Like obviously we had Daniil to come into the squad and being able to kind of help out with a couple of games, but having two or three players with that kind of experience is going to be invaluable, I think. So I'm pretty happy with it. I'm the same as you guys. I'd probably go eight just to kind of split years. Yeah, I think it's a really good window, and being able to keep the guys we have, I think, is pretty awesome too. So I think that kind of segues nicely into our next part of the show, where we give our what we think will be the lineups. Or are they what you think the lineup is going to be, or what you think is our best 11?
Best 11. I think best 11. Who's going to get the most matches, I suppose, maybe in like each position or something? Because whoever starts against Pacific, maybe nowhere near the 11 come the end of the season, right? So
What do you think, Gar?
I don't know. It's up to you guys. Completely up to you guys.
How did you do yours, Gar?
So again, with the 3-4-2-1 in mind that we saw a lot during preseason, or at least the games we were allowed into, I have Jan Filian in goal. Right centre, so three centre backs. So right centre back Dan Nimick, central centre back Julian Dunn, left centre back Cale Lockery. Wing backs, right wing back Zach Fernandez, left wing back Wesley Timoteo. Two holding midfielders, Lorenzo Caligari and Jeremy Gagnon Lapare. Two narrow tens, Probo, and I still haven't decided whether it will be Massimo or Daniels. And I think the Massimo thing is a conversation because I wonder where he fits in into this formation. But anyway, let's go with Daniels. So Probo and Daniels as the tens, and then I think Christian Valeski as the nine. But I'd be happy with him or Thiago. But I think because of his experience, he'll start the first game.
I just want to say, Massimo, I can't believe that you're one of our best players last year, and Gary's just dropped you. So,
I don't know if it's him or Daniels. I don't know. They can share. They can do a half each. They can have a half each.
they
Funny
can enough,
job share.
funny enough, I have them both, Gary.
Oh,
Most people who sent me their formations today did, and we've got four excellent tens, and it's
yep.
how are we going to use them throughout the season? It's a good problem to have because most people probably have Diaz as well.
Go for Chris, sorry.
Similar, like what Gary was saying, like I envision it as like a 5-2-3, as hilarious as that is to say. But it is like Gary said, it's more of like a 3-4-2-1, 3-4-1-2, however things kind of flow. Similar to Gary, I've got Filion, Fernandez, Nimick, Dunn, and Lockery in the exact same roles. Shout out to my boy Wesley. I love that man dearly. I just don't quite think that in that type of system, that's for his role. I think that he'll be in the more attacking set bases where it's like a 3-5-2 type. Him opposite of Fernandez, as much as it worked last year, and Wesley was extremely underrated defensively. I was the one singing his praises for weeks and months when people were watching what was going on up here. I'd be saying, look at Wesley tucking in. Look at Wesley marking this guy. I love Wesley to death. But I think he gets nicked out of this one by JGL. And the reason why is I think in the 3-4-3 or 3-4-2-1 system, Jeremy's ability to be a left back, a center midfielder, and also get up and down the wings, I think is a little bit more important with Zach on the other side, who is an out and out attacking wing slash flank type player. Not to give away too much, we did see him get a little bit centrally during those open trainings, which was refreshing to see because we know Zach has that attacking eye, and when he's in the mix of things, we've seen the best of him. So kind of like a base set five with Jeremy kind of sitting back more so at left back and Fernandez getting ahead on the right side. My two holders in the middle are Lorenzo and Rampersad. Jeremy would be the logical other selection, obviously, but I like the Lorenzo Rampersad Jeremy three to try to kind of find a way to create a wall, if you will, against counterattacks, knowing that one or two of those guys love to get forward, but you know one of those three guys are going to stay back. And again, during the open training, we saw Rampy even tuck in a little bit to the left when Jeremy was making those hard pinches forward. So those would be like my two central midfielders. And the reason I said 5-2-3 is because I see Farron, Daniels, and Coimbra. Although I would love for to be Valeski, I'm just not 100% sure of his fitness level. Like I said, I heard that coming out of preseason, it's a good bill of fitness, but he was the one guy coming in that we weren't going to see getting too much game action very early on anyway. So I only have Coimbra penciled in there just because I think that he's the available body. But Pendon, I've got Farron and Daniels. I don't even know what you would call it, a triangle, some kind of like V. I don't even know what you would call it, but I'm excited to see how it kind of blends and molds together, because we've seen Aiden Daniels be capable of playing, as Gary said, he played a six out west. He can play the eight. He can play the 10. He can play on the wings. He, I think, is, even though this isn't his first go around with the Wanderers, I think this is going to be a season where we start to see the player that we knew he was from the USL, but we haven't seen it yet in a Wanderers kit and mask. So I think he's going to be a bigger surprise than a lot of people are putting him out for. So, but yeah, real quick, Filion Fernandez, Nimick Dunn, Laurie, and JGL in the back. Lorenzo Rampy is the bridge. Farron Daniels, Coimbra up front.
So it was Wesley Timoteo's birthday there 2 days ago. So happy birthday. You've been dropped by Chris.
Sorry, Wes. I think Wes would understand. Put it this way, Wes would still get like 25 appearances for me in a season, even if he's on the bench, because he is unbelievably good, man. He's unbelievably good. And you know what? That's the other thing, too. You know, we were just doing, you know, the signings, rating the signings. I give points to Matt because it's easy to settle on the success of last year. There's so much competition this year in so many positions that I think that that's going to bring out the best in a lot of these guys too. You just hope that we don't see, you know, the disheartened folk like we saw a few of the players last year. I'm not going to name any names. We know who was who and what was what. Come the end of the season, that kind of marginalized the selection process a little bit, knowing that there were guys in this club that weren't going to be selected. Right now, on paper, looking at the team, the only person I would say that might not get a minute is Daniel Clark. I think everybody has a role. Everybody has a spot. Everybody has a place. And I think that's going to be bred through competition. So it was harder to make that than it seemed, because you could do so many guys in so many roles and so many positions.
And also, I would do an almost entirely different lineup if we were doing a 3-box-3 formation guess as well. We both talked about the fullbacks and the wingbacks there, and that's a big question mark I've got going into this season, because if we are using last season's tactics, then we all know from the two fullbacks, Zach as a right back would become a right winger, Wesley as the left back would become a left centre back. Now, from watching those few games of us, we seem to have more kind of wingback fullbacks. So both staying high and wide, both being very attacking. And I just wonder how those roles not only will evolve throughout the season, but have also evolved since we saw it a month ago. Are we ever going to see them invert in? And a reason I say that is because, I don't know, this is getting a bit too granular, probably you can edit this out if this is boring, Ant, but like, I keep thinking about Massimo Ferrin's role in this team right now, because last season he was a wide left winger who would receive it wide, then go out to in. The way we're set up in the stuff I've seen, that position doesn't exist anymore. That position is now a left-sided, very narrow number 10. So
to cut you off, Gary, you say Farron, Telfer. That's Telfer, right?
Yeah. So like, how do we kind of maintain this new structure whilst also creating an environment where Ferrin can still peel out left? Is that by having the left wing back tuck in? Is that by having the left wing back be a bit more defensive and not really crossing the halfway line? Just so many questions, and that's why we love the game. That's why we love the sport, isn't it? So we get to figure all this stuff out and guess what Patrice is thinking and be wrong most of the time. Yeah, exactly.
So I kind of based mine a little bit more on like last year. So obviously went with Jan in goal, and I left Nimick on the as a right centre back, locked me in the middle, and then I think having talked to Roddy Ferraszo in the off season, I think he's way more focused on what he actually like, rather than kind of just being a man who just kind of just gets plonked in everywhere. He kind of wants to focus a lot more on what his best position is, and I think that's going to come across this year. So it was tough to decide between him and Wesley, but I went with Ferraszo just because he has that connection with Patrice too. So kind of put him as like our left back, kind of inferring back in the kind of like what he did last year. I had Fernandez obviously as a right back, right winger, and then I had with similar Chris Rampy and Lorenzo kind of as our pivots, and then I actually had Daniels as a kind of out and out 10. I feel like that's his best position. But it's like whether we can actually get the ball to him and let him do his best work. And he's able to roam then too. Like he can kind of move out left, he needs to cover or whatever he needs to do. I just can't see us dropping Massimo. I just think he was like such an integral part of what we did last year. And I know we kind of with the different tactics that we have, I feel like he's going to try and change a role to fit him into the team because he has to. It's like you can't have that magic finish or that magic touch and not use it. It just seems kind of crazy to me. So I have him still in the team, and then Diaz just haven't seen him. I could feel like you could switch him with Daniels, and they could both play the same kind of role with each other, or even with Massimo. That tree can just flip around, but I think Diaz looked really, really good in training. I think he's going to be probably a standout for us this year. I'm hoping he is anyway. And then up front, I went with Coimbra. You kind of talked about this. I think that everything's kind of geared towards him becoming our striker, and it's kind of like Telfer and Valeski, I think, were brought in to kind of help him along the way. And it's not yet, like it's also kind of ease the burden on him a little bit. So I think we will see Valeski play some games for sure, like start a few games, like then have Coimbra coming in as because he's a you said it before, Gary, he's a disruptor. So, having the ability to bring him on with 25 minutes and just like if you're a defender and your legs are feeling it and then something like that comes on and just starts buzzing around you, it's an absolute nightmare. So I know. So that's kind of where I am. But as you said, it's kind of the beauty of it all is that like, and Chris alluded to it too, that just how strong the squad is that you can kind of just for most of these guys, you can just flip them out for somebody else. It's like it's so I'm not as worried this year if somebody gets injured. I know please God it doesn't happen, but if somebody gets injured, I think we have the squad to cope with it. Whereas like last year we were a little bit light sometimes with who we had to come in. So yeah, man, I'm really excited, and I think we're going to just surprise a few people this year. So yeah, so we would dearly love people to. We're going to put these up on on our Twitter page and on Instagram, and we would dearly love people to let us know their starting 11 and who they think will be in the team. Just post it on like Down the Pub at Down the Pub Pod on Instagram and on Twitter. And then next we're going to do our predictions for this season. And I'm going to try and remember. We have to try and write these somewhere because last year I lost to Gary and I had no idea. I just kind of scrolled through old podcasts and find out what we actually guessed. So hopefully,
I think I put Cavalry as finishing outside the playoffs
mine was pretty bad too.
year.
So we're gonna start, Chris, with you this time, buddy. You tell us 1 to 8 how you think they're gonna finish.
Ooh, 1 to 8. I was gonna go 8 to 1. I was gonna go
Well,
8 to 1. It's up to you. Eight
no,
to one.
you can flip it, whatever you want to do, man.
Okay. Eighth. And Anthony, your kind of summary last week of them kind of summed up my feelings too. There's so much happening off the field with Valor. How is that going to translate on the field? As far as I'm concerned, because of that looming, and we've seen them build into seasons, so it's kind of crazy to put them in last place. But I feel like this might be the year where the balloon pops rather than actually fizzles with a little bit of air towards the end and then kind of fizzles out. I've got Valor 8th. I've got Pacific 7th for the very reasons that I mentioned last week. And it seems like it's now starting to trickle into the fan. I never really noticed it until I kind of brought it up last week. And I've been, perusing Reddit, a couple of Twitter supporters that I follow that I have a lot of trust in. And Gary was talking about Vancouver. There's a bit of a jealousy. There's a bit of a sour taste. Like, we built what Rob's doing over there, over here. Why? Where's ours? Where's our investment? So, Pacific Valor literally either could finish eighth, but I'll for reference, Valor eighth, Pacific seventh. I think Pacific just has a little bit of experience. They could be a seventh that's this close to fifth, but I just think they're missing it in the end. Sixth, I got Mr. Nash and York. It's kind of a risky pick because it seems like all intentions on the ground is that this team's actually playing well. I guess they've been undefeated this preseason, somebody mentioned, or they've lost one game and it was 1-0 to an MLS team. Again, I don't know any of this stuff, if any of this is accurate, but this is just stuff that I've been reading and poking through. And it sounds like they've got a really good preseason going, which is quite something considering the guys that they lost and the quality that they've lost. But York always finds a way to just try to be there and kind of be there. And similar to Pacific being like this close of a seventh, I think York, a final day elimination in sixth. I will admit that I did not think about these guys in fifth until Gary's review of them last week. Have that ability and have that quality and have that potential. And in a league where we saw it last year, how close the standings can be, I think Vancouver will be a bit of a surprise. We're talking about depth with our club. A lot of the other clubs in the league obviously have depth, but I think Vancouver's depth is sneakily good. And again, I didn't realize it until Gary broke them down last week. Did my own little dig in, and I was like, well, you know what? Gary's onto something here. These guys might be a sleeper, but I'll take fifth. Fourth is a controversial one. And I know our good friend Kevin in the Forge Folly will listen to this and be like, ah, doubt us at your peril. You always doubt us at your peril. But I think that Forge will have a bit of a backfire this year.
Ooh.
I think that I know it's terrible to say because I do agree with you, Gary. And we're talking table. I can literally put them fourth in the table and still find a way to have them be the playoff champion. So from fourth to first, there's really no disregard or slight to anything that they have to offer or what they've done in the business end so far this year. But I'm going for the drama behind the scenes. Sexy hot take here that there might be a little something going on in Hamilton that might seep out onto the field and might elicit a slower start than usual. So we'll say Forge finishes a strong fourth. I see repeat value for us in third. I don't quite think we're there yet with Cavalry and obviously on paper, Ottawa is so strong. But I think that if any team can challenge those top two, it's us in third. It'll be similar to last year. I think we'll be nipping at the heels, and I feel more confident of a playoff run with this Wanderers squad. So I've got us third in the table, but I've got us sneakily potentially winning a playoff title. I'm going Cavalry second. I hate to put Ottawa first, but I'm a gambler, and sometimes you gamble on paper. And I think over 28 games with the quality that Ottawa possesses, the cream will rise to the top, and I believe that they will lift the league title. However, I think that their balloon will pop in the playoffs where their fans will be like, ah, we got to win this trophy now because now we got two of these trophies. We got to fill up the trophy cabinet. We got to prove that we're the best. And I think that if any club can do that this year with the pressure that's on Tommy and the pressure that's on Cavalry to finally finish the season with that exuberance, I think the second place Cavs win the playoffs. I think the Wanderers come up short in a semifinal defeat to those very Cavs. And I think the Cavs go to Ottawa and piss off 25,000 fans.
Love it. Love it. What about you, Gar? What are you going on?
I thought we were going to have exactly the same one until the Forge bombshell landed. But bottom half, I've got exactly the same as Chris. Valor in eighth, Pacific in seventh, York sixth, Vancouver fifth. And then in fourth, I have Ottawa, third, Halifax, second, Cavalry, and first, Forge. I still think they're the team to beat. They've kept that group together. They've added Cisse, who's very, very good. They've added Daniel Parra, the Mexican left back, center back, who's very good. And I think they've improved. So I don't think anyone else as a collective has improved enough to overtake them. Cavalry, arguably because they've got Diego Gutierrez, who I love and I think is perfect for them. They're still the closest, I think. And then I think Halifax and Ottawa looking strong. Vancouver, good talent, but again, what's going on in that camp? How happy are they all? Those are the question marks. And York, I think people are underestimating York a bit as well. Like, they've got a good connection to the Mexican market now, so the players that they've brought in from that market will be strong, but they'll be happy with kind of flying under the radar a bit, I think. What about you, Ant?
Yeah, well, it just doesn't talk about Calgary there. Like, the fact that they've lost Mayor Bevan is probably a big loss. I know they kind of quickly swooped in, and it kind of made sense why Malcolm Shaw ends up there so quickly. But I think that has probably put like a little bit of a spanner in the works, because obviously he was like one of their best players last year. So and they've also, I think Joe Mason's hasn't come back either, which is
No.
another kind of big loss. So I went with Valor the last, which I feel bad, but here's what it is. I went with Vancouver next. I think I don't know. I feel like they're still growing, and I think that they might still struggle a little bit. Although they have, as you mentioned, like last week, really strengthened their squad. I just think that second year might be a little bit tough. I put Pacific next. I think the Pacific still have a core of kind of players from that they've kind of managed to hang on to, who will give them a little bit of a push. I went with York next. I think York will be kind of a dark horse. I think they will, like, I don't think they're definitely gonna be as bad as last year. I think they're like, because they went through like some bad, they're so up and down, and I think they're gonna be a lot more solid this year. I went with Chris. I put Forge in fourth. I just think that there's something not quite right. Like, this whole Tristan Henry thing is just leaving such a bad taste in the mouth, because it's being brought up again. Like, Bobby was on a podcast the other day saying that, like, he's up for sale, which is crazy, because the USL season has now started, and like, he's shit out of luck basically, right? So
Bobby's quote in that of, yeah, no one reached out to Tristan or I to get a quote from us. Give me a fucking break.
I
Of
know,
course they did.
it's kind of like treating us, the fans, as like as idiots basically, because
I know.
like there's no way that story ever, how did people know about the green card? How did people know about, like, there's no way any of that story came out without somebody talking to somebody. And I feel like it's such a disingenuous way to go around, basically, like, first of all, like, treating the people who broke the story as being lawyers, and now like that's been proved to be like bullshit. And I was like, well, nobody reached out to us for, like, what are you talking about? People like were reaching out to the club and were told no comment. So
It's
yeah.
one of those things, like, within a certain industry. I think wrestling's a bit like this as well, as Chris could probably speak to. Like, when you work in that world, you assume that everyone outside of that world is a mark. And it's like, Bobby, we know how this works. We know
Know.
how it works, mate. You don't need to lie.
Yeah, it's like, and I'd say, like, I just feel like there was something not right, and not something quite not right there. And then I went with Austin third, Calvary second, and I just think, I agree with Chris, I just think that Odegaard is going to have, pains me to say, but I just think they're going to have a little bit too much for everybody, because I feel like they mightn't start off the greatest. They might have one or two, like, a little bit of a blip, but everybody kind of blends together. But they're gonna go on a run. They all like it. It's just there's just too much quality there for them not to. So, but overall, when it comes to the playoff champions, I just think I kind of agree with you, Gar. Forge have kind of been there before, so I think that the league form mightn't be the greatest, but when it comes to the business end of the season, they just all like, who would have thought they would have won it last year, right? I mean, it was they just always managed to pull it together, and I think that's a mark of how great a coach that Bobby is, that he's able to just pull them through these kind of playoff games. So that's mine. We did have just a couple of quick little questions here to get through before we finish. Where are we going? I just need to find. Sorry, I moved off my screen.
Real quick though, while you're bridging this, Anthony, yeah, I know I had Cavalry as one of my clubs last week there, and the Meyer Bevan thing is a huge in relation to what I was talking about last week. Like, I figured bringing Shaw in to kind of be that competing piece with Meyer, Akio, Moosey, just to like add a little more spice and a little more competition to that position. That might genuinely be one of the biggest losses for a team this season. We've seen players go from one, like, you know, Aparicio and Didich obviously going from one coast to Ottawa. Those are big, but like Bevin, he provided so much for Cavalry, both in the run of play and against the run of play. We saw him at the Wanderers grounds. We saw him in the CONCACAF Champions Cup tournament league, whatever the heck they call it now. You know, he seems to have a knack, and, you know, they're not that type of team, but they showed last year that they had that gear. Losing him, you know, that the pressure is really, really, really going to be on Malcolm Shaw to come in and show something, even if it's off the bench initially, because Bevin is, for all intents and purposes, a star in this league. So, I did this table, admittingly, I think it was the day of. And if I could do it again, I might knock Cavalry down to third.
I was thinking the same since Ann mentioned my Bevin not being there as well. That didn't cross my mind. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, you know, I'm not trying to – everything I said, we're keeping it. There's no revisions. There's no – you say it, it's done. But I think if there's one club that could have, like, a surprise fall from just losing one player, it could be Cavalry. There is still a totality of quality there. But where are the goals going to come from? If they don't come from, who's there now?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where the goals do come from. So we got a question from Sean at Canadian Footy. I think we've answered it. What are your expectations for the team this year? Thanks for your question. This one is from Kyle Findlay. Predictions on how many points we can get out of the first two road games?
Snap your hand off for four.
Oh, God,
yeah, you take four all day long, especially considering just the travel that the players have done. I know we've done it really smartly in kind of stages. We've staggered the travel, but it's still in a completely different time zone from what they're used to. So if we can get four, I'll be ecstatic. If we can get three, I'll be very happy. Even if we get two, fine. Take that all day long. Just not zero, ideally.
Yeah. I think four, like, I'd be ecstatic with. Two, like, if we get a draw and don't lose a game, I'd be pretty happy with that too.
Mm.
Yeah. This one's for you, Chris. This is from your good friend, Kerry Ryan. She has a couple of questions, but I'll see. What club are you most excited to see the Wanderers face this season?
Ottawa, 100%. I cannot wait for those guys to come to the Wanderers grounds. We'll blow Sissoko his kisses. Welcome home. And then after that, once the whistle blows, it's going to be 90 minutes of torture. I really, really, really hope those Ottawa players are ready for a tough away day. But that's one of the things that, you know, I've really enjoyed the composition of their roster, because it feels like those are a lot of guys that thrive under those kind of environments. They've done that for the other clubs. You know, the way DeBrienne played, example, for Valor when their season was all but lost, that's the type of example that I think Ottawa is going to need to see set for them to avoid those early slow starts and get that chemistry and cohesion together. So definitely Ottawa. But if I'm going to be genuine, it's Pacific for, you know, footnote reasons.
I'd be the same, man. And she also asked, do you like the new home or away kit best?
Away for me.
Yeah, I'm the same too.
Home for me. I love the home kit.
Oh, wow.
Mm. Nice.
I think on that note, I mean, undefeated this year. Like every year, it seems like there's maybe one kit of the set of kits that are kind of ugly, but this year's set of kits,
in my opinion,
flawless. Yeah,
some gorgeous ones.
Yeah.
Vancouver's are so nice. Both of Vancouver's, like they and York's are both lovely. I love both of ours. The only one, and I feel like it sounds like I'm having a go at them a lot today, but Ottawa's home one. there was a picture of Manny Aparicio in it, and it looked kind of baggy on him, and it wasn't a very complimentary posture. And someone quote tweeted it saying, he looks like an old man who's going out to pick tomatoes from his allotment. It's such a good tweet. And I was looking for it the other day. I was like searching on Twitter for allotment, old man, but I couldn't find it. But it was such a good tweet.
I'd actually like to see what did pop up.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Dear.
the placement on Ottawa's kits, I guess, would be this year's flaw. I guess it's
Yeah.
like, yeah, like the
Like,
logo, the advert, it's just.
it's a shame because I really like that they've got a local business, or I assume it's a local business as their sponsor. So I really like that. But it just feels a bit incongruous to go with like a modern looking soccer jersey. So yeah.
It really feels like they just like ironed it on. It was like some of those iron on patches you get or something. It just looked like somebody came along, just like what it was like an afterthought and just like whacked it on. But I don't know. I like the away one. I think that's really nice. But I could live without that Vancouver home one with the wing thing on the back of
You're not
it.
like that.
No,
It
that's what.
grew
Yeah, on me. It grew.
I
I
like
didn't
it.
like it. I didn't like it at first either.
Can't feel it.
But it grew on me, and I don't know why it grew on me. But like I kind of like, I do agree that I wish the wings were a little bit smaller because I mean they'd literally go all the way down to the ass.
Like the fact that we're
But
having a conversation about wings on a jersey is bizarre. The wings should be smaller.
there was a couple of like B tier jersey Twitter accounts that were sharing the kit, and there seemed to be like a. Kind of a wave of people saying like this kit would be absolute gold for Nigeria, for
Yeah,
example. And I was
that
like,
makes sense.
goodness gracious, yeah, that's actually a
Big
real good
time.
shout. So like I see where you're coming from, Anthony. But I kind of like it's the composition of the kit grew on me. I think it does have a place. It's a little bit weird in Vancouver. But I something about it though, I love the red too. I didn't like the red at first, and I like the red contrasting with the black. It pops for me now. I was right there with you, man, but that one grew on me. It really did.
And I can also live without that like the Ottawa one, not that weird one that they did, like it was for the, I know it's a charity thing or whatever, but
But pastel colors,
yeah, it's like,
I
well,
love the
I don't
design. The colors are just a little
know.
gaudy, but I did like the
But it
design of
does
that.
feel like we're picking on that at all, and we're not.
I know, here I am. I'm saying the
It's
jerseys are
like,
undefeated and
that's all
we're
right.
gonna go team by team.
They're not listening. They're not listening. We're fine.
But a lot of people like don't I've kind of don't like our home one. They think it's a little bit like safe and boring. I like it, but the away one I think is like much better. So thanks, Kyle, for the question, and thanks, Kerry, for the question. We also have this one from Denton. Which quality Gold TV podcast should I be following? Only one, I guess, that you should be really following, right? That's it's not down the pub. It's there's actually a really good one on there that I think you'd actually enjoy. It's called the World Class Stamp Podcast, and they actually interview. I think it's only a new one, but they've had Matt Letizia on there already. They've had Neville Southall, and they've had Jermaine Beckford. And it's actually a pretty good listen. The Neville Southall one was really good because they asked him about the that famous YouTube video when he's taking the Michael
He's
Owen
only
state.
13. Did they?
Yeah. So yeah, I would recommend that one. It's
There
pretty
was
good.
a, I think I sent you actually though, Aiden Daniels' Instagram story a couple of weeks ago was him. He was made, honestly made me piss myself. Him like scoring a worldie against his little kid in goal, and like there's another little kid watching that shouts, "You're bullying the kids!" Absolutely ruined me. Oh, so funny.
So this one this is gonna be like a kind of off the cuffy one because I didn't really tell you to prepare for this one. So this one's from Andrew Beeman. I'd like to see a team of the year prediction for the CPL. Lots of great signs across the league, including some of last year's top contenders finding new homes within the CPL. Will the same names shine, or will we see new names emerge as familiar faces find their grooves in a new home? So it's kind of a tough one, isn't it? Like to try and predict the team of the year. I don't even know where to start.
No, I'd like I want to answer that eventually, but I want to have like multiple screens of Transfermarkt open on my browser so I can like look at, because we'll forget someone. I've got little pictures. I know I want a double pivot of Lorenzo and Hojapur from Forge. I know I want that. I know I want Diego Gutierrez somewhere. I know I want Becca somewhere. But yeah, I need to fill in the gaps somehow. Can
Yeah.
we sit on that one for a week unless Chris has got something?
I think we should sit on for a
Well,
week.
I agree with sitting on it for a week. But to, continue with the Ottawa loving, you notice how like One Soccer and all the like the big analysts, like their team of the year, the league's top five players, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Seems like they're all Ottawa, all Ottawa. It's like they're setting these guys up to succeed, or again, the first
Yes.
2 months, that pressure, right? Me and Anthony obviously both picked them, but Gary, I am not far off of your prediction either. Like it just takes a few tough fixtures. That 89th minute goal to happen again, to bring back the demons of yesteryear. We had that last year, but Dan Nimick to the rescue. You know what I'm saying? So I think, the usual suspects, I think, will show face. I'm not going to try to like name an 11 off the top of my head, but you've got your Salufs of the day. Even though Pacific's not going to be great, he'll always be great. Someone like Dan Klomp, he's unbelievable. Ali Moussi, you mentioned Becker, Gary, Gutierrez too. Him moving clubs now, is he going to step up or take a step back? I could see him not only taking a step up, but being twice the player that he was over the last couple of years. That's the cool thing about this league is year one, year two, we could make these 11s a lot quicker. And we could. You had your Bustoses, Patrasso, right? Like you had those names. You knew who was the best in each position. We're not just not doing it because we're lazy or we don't know what we're talking about. We're doing it because we're not doing it because there's depth in this league now. There's genuine quality, and guys have shown over, whether it was just last year or the totality of the 5 seasons in the league, depending on who the player is, that tier of quality superstar Canadian Premier League player is not really a tier anymore. That gap it's not really there. It doesn't truly exist. So I agree with sitting on it, and I do think that there's going to be a lot of those repeat names and faces from years past. But I think the fact that we can't just do it is a testament to how far this league has come.
Yeah, I completely agree. To the point where I've changed my mind in 5 minutes, where I actually want Lorenzo and Charlie Trafford as my midfielders, because I think Charlie Trafford's the best player in the league at a push, and I forgot about him entirely, which speaks to the quality all round now.
I first sign on my team sheet will be Alberto Zapater. So last question is from the aforementioned Kevin Anderson. Who will be Halifax's MVP this year, do you reckon?
I think it'll be Lorenzo. I think it will be Lorenzo, but I think people will become so used to him being the best player on the pitch every week that he'll kind of just get forgotten about, and he'll be like, oh, Lorenzo's just being brilliant. So I think it'll probably be Dan. That it'll be Dan, or it'll be Probo or Ferrin, or what, it'll be one of those, I think. Of any of the new ones, it'll be Probo. But yeah, I can't see Dan, and we'll be on Dan, Messimo, Lorenzo again. They're still our three best players, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it'll be Lorenzo. I think that the league hasn't moved on enough for him to suddenly like just be an afterthought. So I think yeah, he was head and shoulders above a lot of plate people last year, and I think he'll be the same again this year. What are you, Chris?
I agree wholeheartedly. Although, as I've said before, and I will say till the end, Zach's got something to prove this year, and I feel like that could push him over the top too. He was an MVP contender for most of last year. I think, as the season was coming to an end, it was a clear three of Lorenzo, Nimick, and Farron. But I don't think Zach was that far behind. I think Zach puts himself into that conversation this year, not to, dislodge somebody from that position, but he's going to earn it. If I'm going to go with a off the board pick, I think it's going to be Zach. There's big things coming for this guy, and I think it starts this season.
Do you think, I'm going to make this a bigger question, actually, not just around him, but Do you think we'll sign anyone over the summer? Sorry, do you think we'll sell anyone over the summer? Because it's easy to forget that our transfer window does not match up with most of the rest of the footballing world. And in June, July, clubs are looking for players. So anyone who was maybe sniffing around a Zach or a Dan or a Lorenzo, maybe didn't want to take a punt on them in season when it gets to the off season. I would be surprised if we have the same group of players at the end of the season as we've got now.
That's the funny thing with July 1st. You said it like our window's not open July 1st, but the world's is. So you didn't want to pay. I'm just throwing a number out here. This is, nothing, but you don't want to pay $500,000 for Nimic. Wait till July. And you have a couple conversations with his agent. Maybe something will happen behind the scenes. Once that 6 month of your contract window comes around, if you're a club from another league, you can have all the conversations in the world with that player. What's it called? The Bosman ruling or something like that?
Bosman,
So like, it's a very good question. I think if these guys are back, I think that there's an element of unfinished business too. And I think that guys like Nimic, Cale Lockery was technically out of a contract. He could have left. Zach, we've seen guys with options in the past, including our lovely Jeremy. You just have a conversation with your owner. And if the relationship is fair, that last year the contract doesn't need to be triggered. And even if the relationship isn't good, with Maury Doner, I love Maury. I'm not talking shit about Maury, but his departure was not on great terms. But the club just saw fit. We're not going to keep this guy here another year. He doesn't want to be here. We're not going to get anything for him because the footballing world all knows he's already disgruntled. They'll just wait. So I think in our case, you might see a sale happen, but I think maybe that club will either loan said player back for the rest of the season, or I think that maybe it'll be like a pre-contract deal. Like maybe they'll make an announcement in July that Nimic's leaving at the end of the season or something like that. I am of the opposite end. I do think that this team will be relatively similar to what it is now. I think there will only be additions. With whatever construct the cap provides. But I would not be surprised if we see some concrete news of a sale at some point during the season rather than at the end of it. Because that's the thing, like so many of the guys that are back on triggers. There weren't a lot of extensions, at least off the top of my head. So like there are a lot of guys on their last year. Lorenzo, Zach, I'm assuming Dan. Rampy might have a trigger left on his year, but I might be mistaken. And I'm pretty sure Riley, Farron, those guys were on 1+1s. So a lot of those guys are on their plus ones right now. So that's the other part of this season, which makes it so exciting, is that so many of these guys are on their contract years, both for here and abroad. They're going to show that level, you would hope, in its totality. So I know it's a long-winded answer to that question, but I do foresee one of that core four potentially having a move lined up, but I think we finish the season with everybody because I feel like everybody who's here has unfinished business.
I think that nobody will leave. Okay, moving on. Just to finish out, I did want to just I have been known to piss on one soccer an awful lot, and I think to certain people at that organization that I'm not huge fans of, but I think that what they're doing this year is pretty cool. And I think this thing they brought out during the week, the One Soccer Creator Spotlight, is an amazing idea to give people a chance to, because there's a lot of people in and around we've talked about in the science who are kind of coming through to cover the league, and it's very hard to get your content out there, and it's very difficult for people to get to read what you do or to get to listen to what you do. And I think it's an amazing thing they're doing, and it's a win-win for them because they get somebody else to do their job for them basically, but they are paying market rates and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's really cool. Josh Healy, who big friend of the show, Wanderer's Notebook, had an article there about the tie between Canadian Premier League and Liga MX, which was a really good read. And I know there's a certain person that may be in talks who gets something done, which I think it's about time that some of the stuff that he does is pushed out across Canada, because I think honestly, not trying to like kiss up to you guys or anything, but you are an amazing writer, and I think it'd be really cool for people to see what it is rather than just like what's in the bondage community, because it is difficult. We've just written about one club in particular, to get your stuff beyond that market, and I think I really hope that comes to fruition, what you're doing with those guys, and I think it's a great spotlight. So I think you can do, like, I think you just reach out to them with an article idea and they will get back to you and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's awesome that they're doing that. So yeah, kudos to them.
Genius, genius business too, because if next year the broadcasts are on a different channel, and I think we're all kind of the assumption that this is the end of the CPL One Soccer professional business relationship, that doesn't mean One Soccer has to stop reporting on the league or Canadian soccer. It's in fact, it seems like their commitment to Canadian soccer will go past the 2024 CPL season. So this is genius business by Media Pro, because what they've now done is they've created legacy where fans of the CPL will continue to provide and create, like you said, Anthony, do their job for them, continue to provide and create content for based off of the CPL without stepping on anybody's toes. And yeah, maybe they might try to run a segment or a profile or something, and they might get rebuked a bit. But there's nothing stopping us independent amateur journalists, and in some cases professional journalists, from providing what we see as fit content-wise for our peers to read, listen, etc. So what they've done again is provided a platform for the Canadian game that the other networks and most of the other platforms aren't doing. So you said it, Anthony. We shit on these guys. We've been making fun of these guys. We've been complaining about these guys for 5 years. This is one of the smartest and, in my opinion, most beneficial things that they've ever done for the Canadian game. And it's just fascinating. It's fantastic. Fantastic.
And I think it's a good way for if you look at the content that they do, and they've brought on a lot of content creators within the CPL, a lot of it is missing stuff from the East Coast, and I think it's a good way to let them see as well, and let the rest of Canada see that there's a lot of talent here within the East Coast, to that can also cover the game too. So it doesn't have to be Toronto or West Coast centric. Josh is doing a great job, Gary, whoever. So great hanging out, guys. It's gonna be an exciting start to the season. I can't believe that we're only a couple of days away from getting this thing back underway. So let's hope next week we get it.
One more thing, one more thing, one more thing. Let's get a score prediction in. Why not?
1-1. There we go.
2-1 Halifax.
We both took my answer one and answer two.
Two twos, happy medium then.
I was gonna say the gambler in me will take that over 3.5. I'll go with 2-2. A fun, exciting performance, and then we'll go to Vancouver and win 1-0 just to piss them off.
So Vancouver's the following Thursday, so let's pod on Monday to give like enough time. Yeah,
That sounds good. So
perfect.
enjoy the game, lads, and I'm sure I'll talk to you at some stage over the weekend with the game.